All right, overreaction week in the NFL, almost in the rearview mirror, here to help make sense of it all for us as we approach kickoff in week two. Cleve TA, you can find his work over at CleveAnalytics.com. You can also catch him on Forward Progress. And I've got to note, the last 3 weeks, that makes it three guests from Forward Progress. It's almost as if I had some sort of role in building out the hammer, but that's neither here nor there today. We'll get to who is here today. Cleve TA, follow him on Twitter at Cleve TA. That's C-L-E-V-T-A. TA, thanks for taking time to do this. Welcome back to Props and Hops.
Thanks, Matt. Anytime. I've been a longtime listener, and I appreciate it anytime you ask me on.
Absolutely, and I'm especially excited to get into everything this week, digging into week one results, what really to take as signal, what to dismiss as noise. And I'll note that while I've got some questions for you to that end, for anybody who's with us live on Twitter or YouTube, feel free to drop any questions or comments into your feed, and we'll work that into the show whenever possible. And TA, to kick things off, when we look at reacting to week one, mainly to inform week two betting for the purposes of this show, what would you say is perhaps the biggest adjustment that you've made off of what we saw transpire across the NFL?
Yeah, so I was telling you kind of yesterday when we were trading messages that I'm probably different than most, that I don't adjust my ratings typically from week to week. And it's not even just week one to week two, but just really any week, unless there's a fundamental difference or just major injury that totally affect, my preseason thinking on these teams. Historically, it's served me very well. Week two has been, if you look back at my kind of betting history in the last, 10 years, week two has been my most profitable year. And it's because I think a lot of it is because I don't really react, necessarily from week one to week two, too much from a power rating standpoint, et cetera. And, that's where I find my biggest edges is by doing that. And I just, I don't see, I mean, I put a preview together. I know you talked about I spend like over a month straight on, and I go in major detail on, and I study all these teams and stats and everything that's, roster movement, all the luck factor, everything that happened last year for these teams. And I come up with, I think, very informed ratings. So one game, one 60-minute game or even like a bad half is not going to change for me how I perceive these teams. I even posted on Twitter, five of the last 6 years, we've had, a team that gets blown out in week one, loses by double digits, and ends up winning 11-plus games and makes the playoffs. Like, we've seen it year in and year out. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, the Titans – if you remember, it was 2021. They got completely demolished at home against the Cardinals. Couldn't do anything right. They turned it over like four or five times. And they went the next week into Seattle, a tough spot. And right away, the first line that I hit that week was Tennessee plus 6.5. And the look ahead, I think, on that was 3 or 3.5. So it moved a full, essentially a full field goal. And I just thought it was completely unwarranted. I wasn't going to change how I looked at the Titans, and I ended up, taking the Titans, and they won, not only did they cover, they won outright, and they ended up being the number one seed in the AFC that year. So like, there's so many examples of that. So for me, it takes multiple weeks for me to really, change my opinion on these things. So, I'm not going to have a huge difference in my opinions for any of these teams, this week compared to what I was thinking last week.
I definitely gravitate in that direction. And I feel like in the last couple of years, the whole week two being an overreaction and there are so many bad lines to pick off just hasn't been as fruitful. I think that I've become really mindful of trying to find that optimal balance of not overreacting, of course, but also not underreacting. So I'll throw one thought your way to see what you think of it. My biggest adjustment coming out of week one was to bump up San Francisco, and that largely centers around Brock Purdy. I certainly had my doubts because last year, I think he acquitted himself quite well, but there was a pretty smooth path, I think you could say. And from a lot of what I saw, it seemed like opposing defenses were often failing to capitalize on mistakes that Purdy was making. So I thought that might catch up with him, and maybe it will at a certain point. I mean, he had next to no draft pedigree as Mr. Irrelevant, and also the injury he suffered, unfortunately, in the NFC title game to really take a lot of the air out of the Niners' sails there, and the aggressive timeline with which he's recovered. I just didn't know how ready he would look come week one for all those reasons, and he made a big statement. I don't think he's going to be mistaken for the second coming of Joe Montana anytime soon in the Bay Area, but I think he more than held his own. So just thinking about the fact that I liked San Francisco, but I didn't really love them. And now what we saw, again, just one game, but Purdy, that supporting cast on offense, a suffocating defense. I just have to ask myself, what's not to love? So with San Francisco, did you make much of a bump, especially out of some potential questions that myself and others had around what they'd get under center?
Yeah, I mean, I like San Francisco too. And I mean, I think everybody would have had them in the top two or worst case three in the NFC. So, you know, they're still there. And I think the fact that we saw Philly yesterday kind of struggle a little bit again, and they're starting to accumulate injuries, I think that's kind of seeping in my head. Whereas I normally would have said, all right, maybe I still would have had Philly up there in the top three. I think anyone who really thought that, you know, San Francisco could go under their win total or struggle a little bit, at least in my opinion, would be more of the totality of the season, the fact that their schedule's tougher. They play four teams who are coming off of a bye week before they play them, which is, you know, the most in the NFL. So like little things like that were kind of, you know, maybe why I didn't, you know, have them winning the NFC, but it's not because of the talent. The talent was always there. And again, you mentioned the Purdy situation. I'd still like to see, you know, another handful of games before, you know, we kind of anoint that, all right, he's for real. I think he's running that offense very well and he's accurate and he's doing all the things you're supposed to. But, you know, I don't think maybe your rating goes from, you know, the number two team in the NFC to the number one. Like, I don't think it's substantially different. In that scenario, you know, for me, it's more of a totality of the season versus just, you know, one, you know, kind of a week to week basis.
And I hear you on it. It's sounding like we're splitting hairs if it's saying, okay, well, maybe they were my number two or three team in a conference. Now they're number one. That can sound like a maybe irrelevant adjustment to get worked up about. But I also think of it in terms of point spreads on a week to week basis. If it's, you know, crossing through the seven against the Rams this week, that might come into play. And also the notion of the best team in the league can be underrated. The worst team in the league can be overrated when we're talking about point spreads as the great equalizer. So just something I wanted to be sure I was quick to react on, especially if the rest of the market is taking the Niners to heart. I don't just want to fade that as a knee-jerk reaction and get left holding the bag at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, a lot of people were thinking, you know, Nick Bosa was holding out, you know, prior to a handful of days before the season opens. So, you know, there were different, you know, there were things that were still in the balance, I think, prior to, you know, last week in general. And I personally had Dallas as my NFC championship team. You know, if you read my preview, I had them winning and, you know, they won 40-0 last week. So, yeah, okay, like maybe it's 1-1A between San Francisco and Dallas, and, you know, when it's kind of all said and done. But I think both teams are, like I said, we're splitting hairs and we'll see how the season kind of goes about before, you know, I make a definitive case that, you know, Philly or San Francisco is by far the best team in, you know, in the NFC.
And there was a team that definitely did not look like one of the NFC contenders, the Seattle Seahawks, really laying an egg in their home loss to the Rams to kick off this season. Talk to me a little bit about what you take away from that performance, or perhaps what you don't take away from that performance to an extreme in terms of maybe not reacting as much as the rest of the marketplace.
Yeah, you know, so as I mentioned, I don't change my ratings unless there's a fundamental issue or if there's, you know, major injuries. And obviously, to me, what happened last week was more about the injuries, I think, than anything else for Seattle. Obviously, losing both tackles. You know, neither one is, they're both young guys, they're second-year players. And, you know, both were kind of mediocre, to below average tackles last year. So they weren't powerhouses. We're not talking about Trent Williams here. But there is a big difference between losing, you know, one offensive lineman mid-game to two offensive linemen mid-game versus knowing that you're not going to have those guys and playing with backups to prepare for a week. So I think the kind of downgrade that a lot of people are giving Seattle because of this is a little bit over the top. Yeah, you know, when you know you're going into a game without both your tackles and you're playing backups, like at least you can do things like, you know, I'm going to chip more with my tight end, or I'm going to leave a back, you know, in the backfield on passing downs, things like that. You're going to, you know, do more quicker throws, run the ball a little bit more up the gut. Like those sorts of things you can game plan for when it's, you know, middle of the second quarter and you're kind of on the fly. It's a lot more difficult. So you look a lot worse in that situation. So I would caution people to not overreact to that degree when it comes to kind of injury evaluation. For me, I still think that, you know, Seattle's a borderline playoff team coming in. You know, maybe you downgrade them a half a point, which is fine. Like I said, losing both tackles, it's pretty rare to lose two tackles in 1 week. So in that scenario, I'm okay, like, dropping them down a notch. But I think, you know, if we talk about the game specifically with Detroit, you know, I still think that they've got plenty of weapons, that they're going to be able to move the ball. They're, you know, Pete Carroll's very good as, you know, kind of energizing his team and propping them up. So I don't think going from whatever was 3 in the look ahead to, you know, a touch 6 this week, and now it's back down to a 4.5 or so. You know, I thought the 6 was egregious. I actually grabbed some myself. I know we were talking about that being a potential buy point. 5.5 maybe, you know, down to 4.5. Now you're getting closer to where I think the true number should be.
So when you talk about downgrading Seattle half a point off of week 1, I feel like a lot of people would say that's a gross underreaction. I know the line is no longer at 6, but even at 4.5, if you only downgraded them half a point, I've got to imagine, while the Lions won in Kansas City, and there's something to be said for defeating the defending champs on the road to kick off a season, digging into their underlying performance, not a lot of sizable upgrades for Detroit coming out of week 1. With this line at 4.5, is that anything that you would think almost still has to be at least a very strong consideration if you're not downgrading Seattle too much on the heels of week 1?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, Detroit looked fine last week. Offensively, they only scored 14 offensive points. You know, one of them was on a pick 6. They were fine. I'm still not sure how they're going to use Jahmyr Gibbs. They'll probably use him a little bit more. But, you know, they don't have a second receiver outside of Amon St. Brown. Obviously, Jameson Williams is suspended. Josh Reynolds and Marvin Jones was terrible last week. Like, they don't really have that second outside receiver. I thought that Matt LaPorta played well at tight end, but, you know, I was lower on Detroit than the market. Not that I was against them. I just didn't see them as the clear cut favorite in the NFC North. So maybe I was, you know, down on them a little bit more than the market. So, you know, in terms of an upgrade, it's probably upgrading them back to where maybe the market was prior last week. So, you know, kind of net, it's not that big of a deal. I think, you know, again, 4.5, 4, 4.5, 5 are kind of dead zones. So it's, you know, really tough. You know, it's, you know, I'm not, like I said, I wouldn't take it at 4.5, but it's not, you know, the worst play at that number. It's, you know, to me, you know, 6, I thought was, you know, you're getting, you know, that's more of a key number, obviously, than when you get to 4 and 5 that are dead numbers. But I like fading narratives. Like, that is one of my favorite things to do just in general. I did this whole thought that, you know, 1 week, essentially 1 half, like, let's go back. Because I watched that whole game. I was watching it live. You know, Seattle moved up and down the field the first couple of drives. They had 13 points when they were entering their last drive, and they essentially took their foot off the gas. I don't know why, but they got really conservative, and they attempted a 40-yard field goal. They realistically should have had at least 16 points at halftime when, you know, most of their lineup was intact. And then it was the second half when, you know, they just didn't have both tackles, and it fell off a cliff, and they couldn't block Aaron Donald. You know, so to me, like, okay, so now you get a week to at least prepare to not have those tackles. I think, you know, I think they'll be okay. Like, I don't think it's as big of a knock as, you know, if they were facing a team with, you know, the Browns or the Niners, teams with, you know, superior edge players that really are going to take advantage of the situation, it might be a different story. But, you know, Aiden Hutchinson is fine, but he's not an elite player yet. You know, Houston's okay on the other side. Like, they don't have an elite defensive line. You can run up the gut on them. Kansas City didn't try it. It's not their specialty. So I don't think it's as big of a difference, again, when you match up who you're facing or when you're, you know, who you're playing against. It's not as big of an issue as it would be against some other teams. So, you know, when I downgrade, again, it matters to who the matchup is. And so, you know, like I said, 4, 4.5 is kind of on the edge. You know, 5.5, 6 is much more of a play.
All right, so it sounds like if we see a 6 reappear, barring any new information and given the factors that you've outlined, then maybe a chance to get back down on Seattle. If not, perhaps the ship has sailed in that matchup to extract as much value as possible. What about any other sides in week 1 that stand out? Is there one in particular that, looking at the board right now on Friday afternoon, that you do still see as actionable?
Yeah, I mean, a Friday afternoon podcast is tough because I think I hit most of my games Monday and Tuesday. I had Kansas City. I have Kansas City minus 2.5 in the back pocket. And I have Carolina plus 3.5. So those are much more buy, much better buy points than we were where we sit now. So I'll give you one that I actually did take this morning that I think is still actionable. And I'll give you Buffalo minus. I think you can still find minus 8. In the market. I also took, by the way, alternative spread minus 19.5 at plus 320. It was on FanDuel. I don't know if that still exists, but I like taking some of these alts, and I'll tell you why. But to me, I'm fading narratives. I don't care what happened last week. The whole Josh Allen is, may not be good anymore stuff is nonsense. If you ever paid attention to how he's played against this Jets team in the past, you'll understand. I mean, I do all these write-ups for every single game and for my website. And I even, I didn't take Buffalo or the Jets last week. I was kind of neutral on the game. But I noted that I thought the under was a decent play because just the Jets are built to stop Josh Allen. And if you look at the last three matchups against Josh Allen, two games he posted a negative EPA, which is rare for him. One game he barely posted a positive EPA and 46% success rate. He put up 27, 17, and 20 points in those games. He looked and he struggled in all three. And if you follow that up, each game the next week in the last three versus the Jets, he's put up 47 points, 70% success rate, plus 0.859 EPA. He had 30 points, 58% success rate in another game. He had 32 points and 57% success rate in the third game. So every single game following the Jets where he struggled, he's come back and had, awesome numbers. And in fact, that first game, the plus 0.859 EPA, 70%, 47 points, was that infamous wildcard game against the Patriots where they could not be stopped, that they never punted, and he looked like the world beater. The prior week, he struggled against the Jets. So again, sometimes it's just like the Browns and Burrow. Like you get a bad matchup, and for whatever reason, they just a certain defense can slow you down. So I don't care what happened last week. He forced things. I get it, but that's just who the Jets are. They're a really good defense. They might be the best in the league. So that doesn't bother me. And so to me, I think this should be more like a 10-point spread. So getting 8, I think, is a solid value at that point. But I think he'll be fine. I don't believe in this Raiders defense. They got Max Crosby and literally nobody else. He's the only one who put any pressure on Russell Wilson last week. Russell Wilson was actually pretty effective. They just didn't push the ball down the field enough. When you only have Cortland Sutton and really no other wide receiver to stretch a field, there's not much you can do. So I think it was just a matter of the Raiders looking better because they played a mediocre offense, and the fact that their offense did a really nice job. Jimmy G controlling the ball, converted a ton of third downs. Every single drive that they started, they did not, they end up getting at least one first down in every drive, which is pretty spectacular. So he did a nice job, but they lose Jacoby Myers, who was his security blanket. You may think that's not a big deal, but if you watch that game, he was literally the one guy that Garoppolo targeted every single third down. He converted, I think, 5 or 6 first downs last week, caught 2 touchdowns. He was awesome. He's out with a concussion. And, now you only have Devontae Adams. You don't have another outside receiver. Hunter Renfrow is just a slot guy. So I think that, the Bills can eye Devontae Adams and Tre'Davious White. I think they'll get more pressure on Garoppolo than Denver was able to do. I mean, Denver put no pressure on him at all, did not make him feel uncomfortable. Back-to-back road games to start a season. Again, we don't want to talk about a lot of these kind of week-to-week trends, but if you look back, starting the week on the road twice, especially when you just came off of a win, typically those teams don't perform well, and you got one that's going from Las Vegas to Buffalo, so you have a little bit of travel there. So and there's other stats that say these teams that get upset like Buffalo in the first week and are facing a team that won in an upset, those teams typically you want to back. So like all of those things to me line up to take Buffalo here. And the reason I like the alt number is, amazingly, 25 of the last 31 Buffalo wins have been by double digits, if you can believe that. Like they just, when they win, they destroy you. And so to me, if they're going to cover this game, I think it's going to be by a really big number. So I took a shot the minus 19.5 here.
All right, a big case for Buffalo, and spoiler alert, as if it's going to spoil the surprise for anybody who regularly consumes props and hops, the Bills at that current point spread, going to come up again in a future segment when we talk about teasers, but I think even against the spread, you've made your case. I hear you on that, and I also heard you right off the top noting that doing this Friday afternoon can be a little bit tricky, and I do think that some of the best betting value that people can get does come early in the week. So it might seem a bit hypocritical of me to say that and then do the show at the time of week that I do. I'll just note that I think what I do best and what I can hopefully bring to provide value to the audience is consuming a ton of information and filtering out what's signal, what's noise, and just distilling the best of the best when it comes to the signal. And taking a good chunk of the week to do that does mean the show comes out later. But just because a lot of betting value, frankly, is gone, as you indicated, by having Panthers plus 3.5, as well as Chiefs minus 2.5 in pocket. A lot of value is gone. That doesn't mean all the value is gone. I still think there is value to be had. And the bet that I'll get to here actually wasn't available at the right number early in the week. And I think it has moved into a much more bettable range. So TA, I'd love to hear what you think about the Patriots plus 3 hosting Miami. That's going to be my favorite side on the board as things sit right now. I came to this one independently. I also heard Steve Fezzik note it is his best bet on the Dream Preview. So that was a nice confidence boost to hear that somebody else with his track record came to this play as well. Really looking at this on both sides of the ball. When the Dolphins are on offense, Mike McDaniel, I thought this might be the case heading into last week's game against the Chargers. He certainly had a counterpunch for Brandon Staley after that Week 14 beatdown the Chargers gave the Dolphins last season. And if there's going to be any coach in the league who can have a quick counter to what McDaniel showed with that brilliant Week 1 scheme, I think Bill Belichick in Week 2 would be the guy to do it. So when Miami's got the ball, I don't see quite the upside that they just really blew out of the water against the Chargers last week. And when New England has the ball, Vic Fangio's scheme is designed to limit explosive plays, and I think that's a lot more effective at times against dynamic quarterbacks. So we saw a pretty big impact on the passing numbers the Chargers put up with Justin Herbert and Kellen Moore's first game as the offensive coordinator. Some people disappointed the Chargers weren't more explosive passing the ball. But when we've got a guy like Mac Jones and the Patriots offense as it's structured, I think they're better equipped to win ugly if that's what it takes, if that's what the Dolphins and Fangio are willing to give them. And in terms of, again, looking to not overreact to week one, but react accordingly, I'll note the Dolphins earned that win and cover against the Chargers. While that game could have gone either way at the end, Miami did show very well. I think New England showed better than the scoreboard would indicate. However, they earned a cover, if not an outright one, against the Eagles, outgaining them by almost a yard per play. They were minus 1 in turnovers, including a pick 6. So overall, I just feel like the spread overstates the gap between these teams. And TA, one little math exercise I want to run by you, and math alert to all the viewers and listeners out there. I think this spread could also overstate the gap between the Patriots and the Chargers if we look at things in a certain way. So TA, just offhand, let me kick this off by asking you, what would you make the line between the Chargers and the Patriots on a neutral field?
I would have Chargers, I can look at my numbers, but I would have them probably minus 2.5.
Okay. I think that's definitely in a reasonable ballpark. That's comparable to what I would have thought. And if I look at last week's closing number against the Dolphins, the Chargers were laying 3, and it was shaded toward 3.5 at a lot of sharper books. And I think if we're generous, we can give the Chargers 1 point for home field advantage. So that says Chargers about 2.5 points better than Miami. And then this week, New England plus 3 hosting the Dolphins. Let's give the Patriots a more standard these days, 2 points of home field advantage. So that's saying that Miami is about 5 points better than the Patriots on a neutral. Implication there, if the Chargers are about 2.5 points better than the Dolphins, and the Dolphins are about 5 points better than the Patriots, that's telling us the Chargers are about a touchdown, if not a tick more than a touchdown, better than New England. And I know we've got to take some context, adjust for week one performance, adjust for some injuries. I know in the YouTube comments, there's a note about the Pats injury report. So I want to account for some O-line concerns, especially. But the matchup here, I think, favors New England, looking at what Miami likes to do offensively, better than it did the Chargers as a heavy favorite last week. So all in all, I like the Patriots a lot here. Clearly, I like that Circa and bookmaker/Chris are soft three, shaded toward 2.5. To me, that's an indicator of where the market is more likely to go if it moves any further here. TA, any thoughts on the Patriots +3 hosting Miami?
Well, it's funny. So when I do, I know a lot of people do this, I don't look at my numbers. I don't look at anything. I think I'm pretty accurate with guessing lines. I'm usually like within 90%, you know, within a point by, you know, 90% of these games. And I had right away Miami -3. So when the line opened up, I think it was 2. I was thinking about pulling the trigger on Miami. And then the more I thought about it, I just thought that, you know, kind of going cross country from Miami to LA and then back to Miami and then up to New England, I thought that was a little bit much. I agree that I think McDaniel spent all offseason kind of preparing for this counterpunch with Staley, because that's all he heard about in the offseason. And he even talked about it last week. He joked about it at his press conference about Staley kind of, you know, figuring out, in quotes, his offense. So I think that meant a lot for him and his staff. So I do think they spent a lot of time there last week. So, you know, you could get a little bit of a deflated look here. I will just say the one hesitation I have with New England is they have been utterly pathetic as underdogs in the last couple of years. If you look at Mac Jones and, you know, my website, I've added, you know, a bunch of new tools that you can do some queries against spread and totals and stuff. And also, you know, quarterback queries. And if I look, I believe Mac Jones has gone 0 for his last 8 against the spread as a starting quarterback, as an underdog, which is amazing. Now, some of that has context. Like last week was a coin flip. He probably should have not only covered, but maybe one that came out right. But in general, I wonder if the market gives Belichick a little bit too much credit post Brady in these types of situations. And I can't figure it out. And that's why, you know, last year I would have, if this was the same situation, I would have jumped all over New England at +3. But I learned my lesson last year. I had them versus Baltimore at home. They got blown out as a home dog. I had them another time where they looked horrible as a dog and got blown out. And I just kept thinking to myself, what is going on? Like, why is it that, you know, you would think in these spots where, you know, they're underdogs, Belichick will get them up, they'll coach them up, and it just doesn't work out. And maybe it's just Mac Jones, but for whatever reason, the market, I think, overvalues Belichick and this Patriots team in an underdog spot. I mean, they are typically undermanned and they are well coached, but maybe just the talent kind of outdoes everything. And he has struggled against Tua. Tua's 3-0 in the last couple of years against Belichick. Like, for whatever reason, he's played pretty well against his defense. So, I don't know. It's a lot of minutia for me to say that I don't have an opinion either way here. I could totally get backing New England at 3. Definitely wouldn't back them under 3, but at 3, I can at least make the case. And I think, you know, you'd have a shot. And again, the situation, you know, does help them. The fact that, Miami's coming off that big win and having to go cross country multiple times, I do think that does, you know, weigh on the Dolphins a little bit. But man, whenever you essentially need to win for the most part to cover against someone like Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle on that offense, it's scary. But, you know, I totally understand where you're coming from.
All right, so we've got TA on Buffalo -8, myself on the Patriots +3. I'm seeing, again, this looks like we've got another comment about the Patriots offensive line being hurt. They had a corner get hurt in practice right before facing Tyreek Hill. I acknowledge that's not great, and I take that into account. But when Circa and Bookmaker are the low people on the totem pole on Miami, then to me that's also a little bit telling, and I think what Belichick can do that Staley was clearly unable to do against Mike McDaniel means more to me than what the market thinks it means. So we'll see what it all comes down to when the rubber meets the road on Sunday night in Foxborough. And moving on, TA, let's talk some teasers. We have a lot of options on the board this week. If we look at that classic model of going through both the 3 and the 7, right now it looks like the Titans have seen some money early on Friday. So they would be a candidate to go up to +8.5 hosting the Chargers. Green Bay, you could take them up to +7.5 at Atlanta. Chicago, +8.5 at Tampa. Buffalo, -2 hosting the Raiders. Still a couple options to go. San Francisco, -1.5 at the Rams. And Pittsburgh, +8.5 hosting the Browns. TA, a lot to work with here. If you were to hone in on a two-team six-point teaser that you like best among all these options on this week's board, what would you say?
Well, full disclosure, I did have a nice long teaser that I put in 2 days ago. I have Houston plus 7.5 and San Francisco down to 1.5. So that would have been my answer, but you know, now Houston's a favorite, so you can knock that off. So I definitely think San Francisco should be one leg. You know, again, you've had them as the favorite in the NFC, and many people have upgraded them, and I don't believe in what Matt Stafford put together. Not Matt Stafford, he's great, but just the rest of that offense, I'm not really buying that, you know, that they can do that again and string together another, you know, good game against a team like San Francisco. But I think the Niners are clearly, you know, probably my favorite side from that perspective. Man, I think I would – wow. You know, maybe I would take Buffalo down as my other leg and just get them down under a field goal. So I would just say, you know, taking both Buffalo and San Francisco under a field goal would be probably my pick right now.
I thought we might be hearing Buffalo from you in this conversation, and it's tough to disagree, especially if you like them against the spread straight up. Then as a teaser like that, that's got to feel like fishing with dynamite, perhaps. Of course, there's a second leg that would need to come through in the teaser, and the Niners bring a lot of appeal in their own right. I'm going to say I was planning to include the Niners in mine. Maybe I'm being swayed a bit by your case for Buffalo. Right now, if I were to identify a two-teamer, let's say Buffalo -2, against the Raiders, and then Pittsburgh plus 8.5 against the Browns. You've made the case for Buffalo, and you might have some pushback for me when it comes to the Steelers leg. As a Browns fan, maybe some hometown bias there, and maybe some other just more objective analysis that you can push back on here. But with the Steelers, I'm willing to go back to the well, thinking about this a bit mathematically as well as more subjectively. From the mathematical standpoint, similar to last week, home underdog in a game with a low total. I think this week they might be the lowest total on the board. Still seeing 38.5 there. I mean, that's almost a preseason total. So the relative value we get in each point crossing through the 3 and the 7 really gets magnified when we're talking about a game that's projected to be so low scoring. Also here, we've got a division rivalry. So there's some good familiarity, a lot less variance typically when we're looking at that kind of dynamic and getting a bit more subjective with it from a handicapping standpoint. I know, if I'm backing an injured Patriots team, I'm also looking to back an injured Steelers team here. A lot of talk about Deontay Johnson, Cam Hayward missing some time. That matters, of course. I feel like I haven't heard as much talk about the Browns being without Jack Conklin, an anchor on their offensive line. So I think that's also going to come into account. And then as good as the Browns were last week, and I followed Hitman getting down on some Deshaun Watson futures, I feel like there were a lot more questions than answers about Watson's arm strength in 2023. So I'm just looking to take one more chance on the Steelers in a teaser early in the season. And again, you've made the case for Buffalo. Full disclosure, I'll probably look to do a three-teamer with Buffalo, San Francisco, and Pittsburgh. I see a lot of appeal there, and you can often get those in the range of at least plus 160, but better payouts that can be available if you shop around in the range of plus 180. So that's something I'll be looking toward. But TA, for the purposes of a standard teaser, any thoughts on pairing Buffalo with Pittsburgh rather than San Francisco?
So when, you know, I'm a Browns fan, but I'm not completely biased here. So I'll be very objective. When, you know, the one thing I, after the Browns blew out Cincinnati and I saw the Steelers got blown out, I was like, oh boy, this is, you know, Browns have to go into Pittsburgh on a Monday night. That's a tough proposition when you have those competing factors. But then when you really evaluate, you know, the Steelers team and the fact that, you know, I don't think you can really downplay the Cam Hayward injury, and especially, you know, and Deontay Johnson as well. First of all, Deontay Johnson is impactful because with Pickens and Allen Robinson essentially left for Pittsburgh outside, you have two of the kind of the worst separators in the NFL that are more contested catch guys. Like Deontay Johnson is that guy that gets open. I mean, he's one of the best from that perspective. You know, that's going to be a huge loss. I'm sure they'll use Calvin Austin. And you can't guarantee anything with Matt Canada at OC because he's probably one of the worst in the NFL. So they're probably just going to run the ball a lot. But this Browns defense is pretty ferocious. Like, I knew they would be a top 10 level defense coming in. Three good corners, really good pass rush. You know, but when you add Jim Schwartz and some of the creative things that he's able to do defensively, you know, Burrow had no shot last week. And so not saying the same thing's going to happen again, but, you know, with a kind of a mediocre offensive line and no, you know, separators outside, you're just going to see a lot of Pickett handing off or, you know, throwing up, you know, one-on-one balls to guys like Pickett. So, you know, it's going to be a struggle for them offensively. There's no doubt. On the other side of the ball, yeah, no Jack Conklin, but, you know, DeJuan Jones is a fourth round pick from Ohio State. Highly recruited guy, should have been, easily could have been a first round pick, maybe a second round pick, you know, but he had some weight issues in the offseason that bothered people, bothered scouts. So he dropped to the fourth round, but he is, in every situation they put him in, he has really succeeded. He played the entire Hall of Fame game in the opener out of nowhere and held his own against guys like Huff on the outside against the Jets, for example. They had a couple of good pass rushers that played a handful of snaps, and he held his own there. And then he played the rest of the preseason and played very well. Last week, I don't think he allowed a single pressure when he came in for Conklin. So he's kind of, I mean, he's a mountain of a man. I have no idea how he's going to do, you know, with the noise factor and the get off with guys like TJ Watt and Highsmith. But, you know, I don't think it's as much of an issue as, you know, it could be with kind of a standard, you know, drop off from a starting right tackle to a backup. I mean, he's got the talent level to be a high end tackle. So, you know, it remains to be seen, but I don't think that's much of an issue. I mean, the Cam Hayward injury is a big deal. Like they, if you watch some of the cut-ups from last week's game, I mean, he only played a handful of snaps, but then once he left, like the middle of that defensive line just opened up. Whenever McCaffrey got the ball, I mean, he broke off that huge one. They don't have really anybody else to replace Hayward. Guys like Montavious Adams, DeMarvin Leal, those guys are not very good run defenders. If you look at some of their PFF grades, et cetera. So, like, and they don't have a good, you know, Landon Roberts is the middle linebacker. Like, they, you know, they don't have the greatest run defense to stop, you know, Nick Chubb, et cetera. So I think it's going to be a grinded out game. Again, a low scoring game. You do have kind of that, you think you have that floor from a teaser perspective. But, you know, there is a chance that Pittsburgh, in this current state, Pittsburgh just isn't very good. And the Browns blitz them and win, you know, 17-7, and you don't cover your teaser. But I totally get it. I wouldn't blame you. I mean, this is, you know, they clearly are going to be up for this game. And, you know, I think they're going to harass Deshaun Watson, who takes a lot of sacks. This is one issue. One of his issues is he invites pressure. So, you know, there is a chance that this is just, you know, a 13-10 game, right? So, totally get it. And I don't blame you at all for taking that. But I just wanted to give both sides of the coin here.
All right. Well, you heard it here first from TA. Deshaun Watson's one issue, he takes sacks. Otherwise, as a player, as a person, no other issues. So,
I said he had other issues.
All good under center in Cleveland there. All right. I also, oh, go ahead.
No. Has nothing to do with Offman.
Oh, of course. Yeah, definitely just poking fun at that. That's all good. Not something to make light of any further. So let's move on, TA, before the show gets canceled in week two. There are some 6.5-point teaser options on the board as well, in the range of, I'd say, up to -130. Those can be worth playing in the right spots. And we're getting some options. I feel like it'd be remiss not to just touch on them briefly. The Colts, you could take up to +7.5 at Houston. You timed that game very well from a teaser standpoint earlier in the week. Also, Cincinnati, a bit outside the box, but you could kind of cross through three twice. They're a juicy 3-point favorite, and 6.5 points could get you to +3.5 for the Bengals hosting the Ravens. And then Dallas, a consensus 9-point favorite right now. You could take them down to -2.5 hosting the Jets. And if I were to play a 6.5-point teaser, I'd probably cross off Houston right now. I just feel like there's a lot of unknown with both quarterbacks involved and a lot of variance early in the season. So I'll pass on that game. But with the Bengals, again, as a juicy -3, you're getting closer to 7 points for the price of 6.5. 1, 2, and 0 can be pretty dead numbers to tease through. But if you're getting 3 essentially a couple of times, that does bring some interest to mind in my book. And then Dallas, you know, asking them to do a little more than win outright at home against Zach Wilson sounds a little bit too good to be true. So don't take it for granted that anything is going to be a lock. TA, any thoughts on a possible 6.5-point teaser if somebody wanted to look the way of the Bengals and the Cowboys?
Nah, I'm not a fan of either one. Yeah, I mean, I would just take Cincinnati straight up, to be honest, if you're going to do that. I don't, I actually like Dallas's team total under a little bit. I think the Jets' defense is legit. I mean, if you look at, you know, some of their numbers last year, you know, they were number one in my, what they call a consistency ranking. So they held their opponents below the kind of their season average, the highest rate in the NFL. You know, they were really good. The one thing they didn't do well is they didn't cause any turnovers. They had the fourth lowest EPA gain on turnovers last year. So, and we saw last week where they had five turnovers they caused. So if they're going to get a little bit of that, you know, bounce of the ball, the regression going their way, you know, they could be the best defense in the NFL. And I just, to me, if you have an elite defense like this, and we've seen it time and time again, like how often have we seen in the last couple of years where a starting quarterback goes down, market overreacts, typically overreacts, you know, to a point for the favorite where it's, you know, there's value on the underdog, and the underdog not only covers but wins outright. Like, we see it so often. These teams rally around quarterbacks. I don't know if Zach Wilson's that guy, right? Because he's kind of been there, and he's not just like a spot starter. You know, he's been there for a couple of years. But I don't know. Whenever you have an elite defense like this, it scares me to even take a good team like Dallas. I mean, I love Dallas this year, but it's not worth that tease right there. So I would probably be a pass. On my end.
I hear you on that. And I also know a lot of people won't be able to resist getting exposure on Dallas in some way, shape, or form this Sunday. And I think one of the most common ways that a lot of bettors will look to attack the Cowboys would also be to put them in a money line parlay with the Niners and the Bills. I think that a lot of talk already making the rounds about that money line parlay. Again, Buffalo, San Francisco, and Dallas in the range of even money, minus 105-ish. And that can sound like, again, if it sounds like it's almost too good to be true, then that should get you thinking twice. You brought up some wise words of caution as far as Dallas goes. But if you're going to look to do something like this, I would suggest basically getting at the same outcome for a much better price. And that would be a three-team teaser, especially as some books now are down to 8.5 for the Cowboys. You can tease these three teams down through the three and get a payout in the range of plus 160 to plus 180. So yes, it's possible that one of them could win by one or two and the money line parlay would hit and the teaser would not. But for the extra 60 to 80 cents that you're getting, just consider that three-team teaser rather than a money line parlay. Again, if we're looking at much better value for essentially the same outcome. Any thoughts there, TA, just in terms of how to get down if you are inclined to get exposure on the Bills, Niners, and Cowboys?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you explained it pretty good. I think that's perfectly fine. Like I said, to me, the Jets game, it seems to, like, for whatever reason, I just think we have an elite defense like that. Just anything could happen. And I just, if you want to get down, getting under a field goal, I think is the right spot, especially with that low of a total, you know, getting under a field goal, I think is important. So the other two, like I said, on their own, they might be fine. But yeah, if you're going to take Dallas, getting under a field goal is definitely the goal.
And T, I want to note, I'm not sure if you're able to see it in real time, but you're getting a lot of love in the chat from our YouTube audience. So thank you everybody for the kind comments there. Thank you for Justin on your note as well. Enjoying the show as always. Love to hear it. We got some great guests, so we'll look to keep it going moving forward, but also to make sure that you all can continue to enjoy the rest of this show. TA, want to make sure we also touch on props and the opportunities that could be on the betting board there for week two and the NFL. Is there one actionable prop that you wouldn't mind sharing?
Yeah, I don't know if it still exists because I think people are probably before I came on here, so you'd have to tell me. I think Justin Herbert is, and I haven't, I'll be honest, I think I saw it initially at 277.5 passing yards, and I think it was like 282 right before I jumped on. So it might be even higher now, but and I think people have the same idea I do. But I just think, you know, for me, and I would probably, to me, I would take this anything under like 286, 87. Like, to me, I don't care what happened last week with you talked about the Fangio defense is really catered towards stopping big plays, keeping everything in front, the two high shells, inviting the run, which the Chargers did, and they don't do on anybody. So it kind of shows you. So definitely that they took advantage of that. So I don't really care what his ADOT was last week. It's just that game and that defensive strategy was conducive for kind of shorter passes. So I'm okay with that. Let's see what happens this week. know, they go up against the Tennessee defense, who, you know, they're an elite run defense. They're number one in the NFL last year. They held Jamal Williams last week to 2.5 yards a carry and a horrible success rate. So, you know, most teams just, they used to do this with Tampa too. They say, we can't run on them, so let's just, we'll just drop back and throw 50 times, 40, 50 times. And last year, when you look at Tennessee, they led the NFL in opposing quarterback pass rate over expected in neutral game situations. So teams didn't even try and run the ball on them. If you look at the Eagles game, for example, it's a classic situation where you have a smart coaching staff that just said, oh, we're not going to try to jam a running back up the middle against this, you know, this great defensive line. We're just going to, you know, pick apart your terrible secondary. And so they blew out the Titans last week or last year. We saw Derek Carr throw for over 300 yards. He's able to get the ball down the field. So I think there'll be plenty of situations for Herbert to push the ball down the field. You know, Eckler may or may not play. So that reduces, again, your kind of interest in running the football. And hope Staley, you know, I'm losing a little bit of faith in him, but you hope he's, you know, making positive EV decisions here where he will decide to put the ball in Herbert's hands. You know, last year they against a set of quarterbacks that I think they averaged something like 245 yards per game against Tennessee, they allowed almost 300 yards, which is pretty ridiculous. They gave up 11 of 16 quarterbacks that, you know, dropped back at least 20 times in a game against Tennessee, went over their average passing yard total. Five of them threw for over 350 yards. Even Herbert himself in that game last year, he wasn't very good. He wasn't very efficient. Threw the ball 42 times, 313 yards. The Chargers passed the ball 65% of the time. You know, as long as this game is not in a blowout kind of script, which I don't see this, I think it's more of a toss-up and obviously a three-point spread. We'll tell you that. I think there's plenty of reason for him to keep throwing. I think they can pick apart the secondary. He threw for 313 yards last year with poor efficiency. You know, I think he can get to above that. So I like the 282.5 that I saw right before we came on. I actually like, if you go on DraftKings, I think FanDuel has this too, if you want to, for a little bit of fun, you can take kind of weekly specials. So most passing yards on a Sunday, I think he was at plus 800. Before I came on, that's a fun one. If you want to sprinkle a little bit on that, if you think he's going to throw for over 300 yards, he's definitely going to be in play. So those are that's kind of my first look. I don't do a ton of props, but when I do, it's more about finding very specific matchups and areas that can be exploited. And this is one that I think can be exploited. I mean, just to tell you, I mean, he averaged 278 yards last year. So literally, the books opened this right at his average last year. They put no effort into. They don't care, right? It's just. A loss leader, but they put no effort into this, and it's going to be pounded up because, you know, people are paying attention to matchups, etc. We'll hammer it. So I think there's still some value there, and that's the one I'm gonna, just because you're a Chargers fan, I've decided to give you that too.
I'll take it. You know, I try to stay objective. Last week, the Dolphins being my best bet against the spread, so I'm not just looking to blindly back my team, but if anybody was following along what I was sharing on Twitter earlier this week, you'll know that I am in on this as well. So TA and I did not rehearse this at all, but that is definitely my favorite look on the prop betting menu this week as well. And TA, I'm excited to hear that from you, because this actually, from what I saw, it did open in the high 280s and came down. And there's been a lot of talk about the low A dot last week. I think that has a lot to do with it. I'm with you on why we can pretty much give it a pass for this week. If the Chargers aren't attacking the Titans secondary in week two, then really we'll start to reevaluate what to think of Kellen Moore and the outlook for the rest of the season for their offense. But I think you made a really good case for Herbert's over, so I won't add too much more to it than that. Yeah, I am seeing 281.5 flat, okay. Pretty widely available. So there I think that's a go in both of our books. One more thing I'd throw out that's related to this. You had a derivative of basically leading the league in passing yards. I've also gotten down on Herbert's longest completion over 37.5. And for a bit of context here, you touched on the Saints really airing it out against Tennessee last week. They had four different players with receptions of at least 25 yards. So it wasn't just the Chris Olave show, and they had two separate players with receptions of more than 40 yards. So any interest, TA, and maybe a split ticket between not only Herbert's yardage over, let's call it 281.5 is a widely available number, you know, maybe a flyer on him to lead the league in passing yards, but any interest also on an angle like Herbert longest completion over 37.5?
No, I mean, I just haven't done the work on it to give a give a great answer. I mean, if you've done the work, then, you know, I'll trust you on that. I personally just like, you know, the volume aspect of it. You know, you could actually just do pass attempts. I don't know what his number is, but if it's in the upper 30s, I would take that over more than anything. So, yeah, I mean, that could be an offshoot of it, but he can easily get to that he can clear the 300-yard mark or the 281 mark. Even without getting long receptions like that. So to me, I'd rather go volume than anything. So, but, you know, I totally get where you're coming from. And hopefully, you know, maybe they get a Quentin Johnston deep ball or a Mike Williams deep ball. But, you know, again, it's kind of all in the same thesis that, you know, you just attack this Titans secondary. You don't even try and run against the brick wall. That's their defensive line. And, you know, you hope that you break some big ones. So, I mean, I think it's all in the same family.
Yeah, and the mindset of all it takes is one can be very dangerous when it comes to props. So for the record, I have the majority of my exposure on the passing yardage number for the game. To your point, embracing the volume there. Just thinking with a lot of correlation, if he does go over his number, then we're probably going to see it at least one in the range of 40 yards, if not longer. So just a little bit of exposure on that angle as well. TA, one more prop I'd like to run by you. I was in touch with Adam Chernoff over at Right Angle Sports earlier this week, and he has expressed to me, as he then did on his podcast, A Simple Handicap this morning, a lot of interest in Anthony Richardson as an anytime touchdown scorer. Earlier in the week, before this line was available, he was telling me he thought it might be in the range of plus 125, and even that piqued his interest. But it opened plus 180 again, and I'm still seeing it in the range of plus 160 for Richardson to score a touchdown. And when I was talking with Adam, he mentioned that Shane Steichen has a track record of running quarterbacks in the red zone. That's especially likely to be the case for Indy, given their issues in the rest of their backfield. And while Adam was anticipating a much lower price this week with the backfield situation the Colts have got, a lot of intrigue in Richardson to score a touchdown. Any thoughts, TA, just offhand, on what you would consider to be about a fair price on Richardson anytime touchdown score against Houston?
My biggest concern there is the concussion. Or, I mean, he didn't have a concussion. Whatever, he got knocked out last week, right? Mm-hmm. Are they going to be a tad more conservative with his running this week? That's my only concern. I mean, he's obviously an elite athlete. He can get outside. You know, Houston's linebackers, Denzel Perryman's questionable, you know, but otherwise they're not the most athletic bunch, you know. So he's going to have some opportunities. Do they want to force the run again? If they get to the 1 yard line, they're just going to do the butt push. But so you got a good chance there. But you know what are his kind of, you know, what's the strategy with and the injury look like from that respect? That's my only concern. I think the number's fine, and I get the reasoning. It's just, you know, some of those are fluky. Like, he really has to, you know, you got to find situations where he's going to be inside the 5 yard line, 10 yard line a lot. How often is that going to happen with this offense? I'm not sure. But, you know, I totally get the angle, and, you know, I don't have a fair price for you. I think what is out in the market is perfectly fine. So totally understand the reasoning, but if it wasn't for last week's kind of getting knocked out, and maybe, you know, if they don't want to completely overuse him all right off the bat, you know, I would be on board with you for sure.
All right, understood. Well, TA, I'm going to say that we'll have to have you on again at some point, hopefully before too long, and maybe we'll double down on the Hops and the Malinsky Minute as part of that conversation, because in addition to doing this, being a father of two, having a separate full-time job, I know we've got to respect your time here, so I want to thank you for hopping on the show this week, and I want to just mention a couple of ways that listeners can support the show if they're inclined to do so. And for those of you who are still tuned in, clearly that's an indication that you're finding some value in the show. So to those of you with us on YouTube, if you could go ahead and like this video, subscribe to the channel, turn on notifications so you can be aware whenever we go live, that would be greatly appreciated. Similarly, for those of you with us on Twitter, liking this post, reposting, following TA at CleveTA, myself at Lay of the Landis, and the show at Props and Hops Pod.
Wait,
and
Matt.
Speaking of the podcast, yeah, TA, go for it.
I do have a minute to talk a drink if you want. So once you're done.
Okay. Let me finish this up. I've got one more important note to drop in, and then we will get to it. Okay. I will take you up on that. Absolutely. For those of you catching the podcast, please take less than 5 seconds to leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Subscribe. And last but not least, however you're listening to this, I want to note you can also, new this season, support this show by supporting Right Angle Sports. I'm partnering with them with an affiliate deal that if you're so inclined to check out their picks, you can use a custom link I've set up. It's tinyurl.com/RASPicks. If you're listening via YouTube or the podcast, you'll find that in the show notes. That's also linked to in my bio on Twitter. So if you're interested in Right Angle Sports, then a great way to get involved would be through this link to also support this show along the way. TA, I was going to sign us off, but if you do have a minute to talk a drink, let's weave in the hops at the last minute. What have you got?
Yeah, 1 minute. And this is pretty pathetic on my end because I don't drink much very often. The only time I can have a drink with a 4-month-old really is on the golf course in my golf league. So I've been getting into, have you heard of the long drink?
No.
It's kind of like a White Claw, like, it's a citrusy drink, but it's from Finland, but a lot of people are drinking on the course these days. And I don't even care about the alcohol. It tastes really good. Almost too good. But it's like it's got like a citrus taste. It's very sweet, not very sweet. It's sweet. But it's essentially a gin, it's like a gin flavored, White Claw, if you will. So, it's fantastic. That's what I'm drinking these days. I'm not really drinking. I used to drink Old Fashions before, we had our second, but maybe I'll get back to that soon. But, long drink is a recommended, it's my favorite right now, especially on the golf course. So, if anybody out there wants to give it a try, it's fantastic. So that was my two.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, and looking at this, okay, the canned cocktail. What I like about that is the convenience. I'll weave that in with something I'm drinking. And as a non-parent right now, I can go towards something a little bit heavier. And I just ordered cans of double dry hopped Pliny the Elder, a double dry hopped West Coast IPA that clocks in at 8% ABV by Russian River Brewing Company out of the Bay Area, Santa Rosa, and Windsor, California, being their two locations. And to your point about having a canned cocktail, this used to be something that would only be available on draft or very limited packaging. A lot of glass bottles can be really fragile. I just appreciate when something is canned, to your point, take it out on the golf course. If you do any travel, you can tuck it in a checked bag and not worry so much about it breaking. The convenience is great. And then just like you enjoy the quality of the long drink, I'll say double dry hop Pliny the Elder is second to none. From the lighter stuff to the heavier stuff, glad we're still finding ways to work in the hoppier side of life as the NFL season's getting underway.
Yeah, I wish if I would have been on your show like 5-10 years ago, I would have a lot better options here, but life has changed in the last half decade, so my options have really dwindled to just whatever I can get in 9 holes of golf on my Thursday night league. So that's really where I'm at these days. But I was introduced to that a couple of weeks ago by a golfing buddy, and I was like, "What is this?" And he's like, "You're not gonna regret it." And the taste is fantastic. It's good. It's kind of a citrusy gin, and it does the job, especially on a nice summer day or early fall day. When you're playing golf. So that was my recommendation. It's the best I can do.
And when it comes to looking at week 2 sides, teasers, props across the board, TA, you get the job done as always. Thank you so much for hopping on the show today. Want to remind everybody they can check out your work at cleveanalytics.com. Also on Forward Progress on Mondays this season, recapping the week that was in the NFL with friends of this show, G-Stack, George Sofidis, as well as Fabian Summer. And anybody who's not doing so already, go ahead and be sure to follow Cleve TA on Twitter at Cleve TA. That's CLEVTA. TA, once again, thank you. This has been a blast. Really appreciate the time and insight today.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
And to those of you watching and listening, thanks once again for your time. Enjoy week 2 in the NFL and best of luck with your bets this weekend.